It's time for the World of Aviation, sponsored by Academy College of Aviation in Bloomington and by Thunderbird Aviation, with locations at Flying Cloud Airport in Eden Prairie and at the Crystal Airport. Here now is your host, Al Malmberg.
And good morning and thanks, Doc. This morning we're going to hear an incredible story of survival. Heather Ann Sharp started flying at a young age, going on to fly C-130s in the Air National Guard, and then going on to fly 747s with Northwest Airlines. That's all incredible, but what is more incredible is how she survived two accidents where she was just looking directly, death directly in the eye. These accidents, by the way, had nothing to do with her career in aviation. Heather, welcome to the world of aviation.
Thank you very much.
By the way, I loved your book.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You know, it's a roller coaster ride when you read it. I finally found myself laughing, and I find myself just incredibly sad. The next chapter. I mean, you've put us through, as I said, that roller coaster ride. It's an incredibly inspirational book, and I would highly recommend it for everybody. And before we move on, where can we get the book? Is it available on Amazon and any place else?
It's available on Amazon, and since knowing that I would speak to you, I just revised it, and hopefully it will be live on Amazon. They're proofing it right now. It is available on Amazon, heathersharp.info. And after speaking with you, I went and revised it, and it got even better. And it's very high praise to receive that from you, because you speak to a lot of people, and that's very, very nice.
Well, the name of the book is Why Did I Survive? Why did I survive? We're going to get into that. But first, I'm going to go back. I love this story. And I'm going to go back when you were helping your dad load, I can't remember what it was, onto a 747.
Right.
And you were in awe of the 747. The crew actually invited you up to the cockpit. First of all, how old were you, and what the heck were you loading on board this 747 helping your dad?
Exactly. I was 17 years old, and immediately prior to that was career day at high school, and the teacher said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I think I want to be a flight attendant because I like to travel. And she said, I think you should be a pilot. And I said, oh, no, they don't let girls do that. Yeah,
wow.
They do.
Yeah.
So that changed my life. And my dad was a veterinarian, and his job was to give a health certificate and vet check rodeo stock that was flying to Japan for a Wild West show.
That's
right. So at Stockton Airport in the Central Valley of California, my dad and I went out there. And I was helping my dad. It was roping calves, roping steers, bucking bulls, bucking horses, saddle horses, to go on the 747. And the crew saw me looking up the stairs, and they invited me up there. And they said, well, what do you want to do? I said, well, I think I might want to be a pilot. Is this hard? And the co-pilot grabbed a hold of the yoke and pushed forward. He says, this is a piece of cake. You pull back, the houses get smaller. You push forward, they get bigger. and then he slapped the captain on the shoulder. He said, any idiot can do it. Just look at our captain here.
And you were sold. I love it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was sold. I was hooked.
You told your dad, I think when you were on your way home, that you wanted to fly one of those things.
Right.
What was his response to that?
Well, and as I walked down the ramp, because I'd been up there in the cockpit, and there was a backup of cattle, he's like, where the heck is she? And I said, Dad, I'm going to fly that thing. He goes, that's very nice. Like I had ordered, asking him for a ham sandwich. He goes, that's very nice. Let's load these cattle first. And so we off they went to Japan, and that there were many things that changed my life. That changed my life, and off I went to Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo, and was a flight instructor and flew freight. I also want to step back a little bit. My family was involved in rodeos, and I thought that it was completely normal that I competed against men and women. It was me against the clock. I didn't have any sense of, I didn't even know the term gender inequality. And so I had no concept of what I was doing then was unique, and being a female pilot would be unique. Also, what helped me in my accidents was the power of positive thinking. And that was, my parents were almost evangelical about it, that there, if I uttered a negative word, there was no room for that. And wow. what they said is, what you think about will manifest itself, and your brain is incredibly powerful. And so those two things, having that instilled in me, helped me later. So off I went to Cal Poly. I was a flight instructor, and then upon graduation, flew freight for AmeriFlight. We flew next day air checks and UPS packages, and remember the little photo mat store instead of 1 hour photo.
We
cleared bank checks. We went and picked up the bank checks, brought them back to the central bank. You had about a 3 day float. You could write a hot check. Then after that, I got hired.
Heather, can you hold on? I want to backtrack just 1 second. I think that any pilot that's listening is hearing you talking about loading cattle and horses on board a 747.
Right.
How do you maintain the CG, the center of gravity, that every plane has to have, even a 747? How do you determine that when you have cattle and horses?
Exactly. And that was a very quick learning experience, and made me realize I really like this. The loadmaster, before we loaded the cattle, because my dad was just going to, you know, the very first one, he was going to load the 2,000-pound bucking bull, and the loadmaster said, no, let's load the rope and calves first, put them in the back, then the rope and steers because they weigh lighter, and then we would put, he wanted to be sure that we'd put the bucking bulls with horns on the inside and the bucking bulls without horns close to the side of the aircraft, so that, and he said, so that we won't have a rapid D. And it, what? what does that mean? A rapid D. If the bull pushed his horn into the side of the aircraft, and like, oh, I love this. all the moving parts, I love it.
Now, did they have pens set up inside the 747 for these animals?
They do.
That's fascinating.
And when I flew the 747 for Northwest Airlines, we had 44 passenger airplanes and 12 freighters. We had a freight operation that was headquartered out of Anchorage, Alaska, and we transported racing horses. We transported a walrus one time. Well, no, that was in the C-130. when we transported animals, their urine was a real problem. And also, I never had to transport pigs, but the wisdom was that if you have to transport pigs, bring a garbage bag and wrap your luggage in it, because if you don't, after you're in the airplane for 12 hours, your luggage will stink for 60 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You know, things that we would never think of. I would never have thought of that.
Right.
Amazing, amazing. Heather, we're going to take a break. We're going to pick up right where you left off and talking about your flying experiences. And then we're going to get into these two horrific accidents that you had that were death-defying, to say the least. Heather Ann Sharp is our guest. The book she has written, well, actually she's written more than one, and we'll get into that as well. But the book that I have is Why Did I Survive by Heather Ann Sharp. You're listening to The World of Aviation. All right, Heather, let's go back to your flying. Let's pick it up with you joined the Air National Guard. What prompted you to join the Air National Guard?
I was working for American Eagle, and I was at the very bottom of the seniority list. I was never furloughed. And at that time, the major airlines were not hiring. As you know, it's very cyclical. And right now, mm-hmm. there is a massive pilot shortage. At that time, there was not. I had been, I was going nowhere fast. I lived with 27 of my closest friends in a crash pad in in New York. I made $12,600 per year. I flew the shorts, which is kind of like a mobile home with wings. And I said, oh, boy, this is not the glamorous career that I dreamed of.
Well, I was going to say, stop romanticizing it, would you? 27 no. roommates in a two-bedroom apartment and
yeah.
Yeah.
And so the shorts, just a quick story about the shorts. The shorts 360, if your listeners want to Google that thing, it was not pressurized. I think our cruise speed might have been a whopping 150 knots or something.
Wow.
And we used to fly from Boston, New York, down to Washington. And this thing wouldn't go fast. It was always in the way. And ATC was yelling at us. And they said, can't you make that thing climb any faster? And before I could key the mic, the captain put his hand on my shoulder. He goes, I got this. And he said, listen, we're doing the best we can. It's hard to climb when you've got a load in your shorts. Very
funny.
Cute. So I went to the Air National Guard, which is kind of a lengthy story how that happened, but absolutely in the right place at the right time. And I was 4 days away from the age limit of, at that time, 27 and a half. And so I was the oldest person in our class, and I had, I think I had 3,500 hours when I went to the Air National Guard.
This was in California?
Actually,
or where?
So this was in Nashville.
Okay.
And because of American Eagle, I'd been through several bases. San Jose, Nashville, JFK, Nashville, JFK, Nashville, JFK. I thought, oh, my gosh. I'd been through, like, five different aircraft training events. I thought, oh, this has got to stop. And so I went to pilot training, UPT, down in Columbus, Mississippi. I flew the T-37 and the T-38, which is so really two of my favorite airplanes looking back, the 747 and the T-38.
Wow.
I don't think it gets better than that.
Yeah. So progression-wise, first of all, what years are we talking here when you went into the Air National Guard?
So I went in 93, and I graduated pilot training class 9510 in 95. I flew for the Air National Guard, the C-130, in Nashville. And then when I got hired in 1997 by Northwest Airlines, I got based in Anchorage. I was able to transfer my guard base from Nashville to Anchorage and complete my, at that time, the requirement was 6 years. Now it's 10. So I was, we lived in Alaska for 4 years, had just a fabulous time. Flew the 747 for Northwest and then part-time for the Air National Guard, C-130s, which was just outstanding.
What was it like the first time you got behind the stick of a C-130? What did that feel like?
Oh, well, because I had previously flown the ATR 42, it felt like home because I was used to that type of aircraft, that size. And I was lucky enough to wind up distinguished graduate in the C-130 school. But it was fantastic. And anything that we would fit in the back, we would take it. We dropped Navy SEALs over South America at high altitudes. We took an ice cream machine down to the Amazon forest where our army troops were fighting the drug war. We went to the sandbox. And that was the case where I took a walrus from, I think, Seattle up to this Seward Life Aquatic Life Center. If it could fit in the back, we would take it.
Wow. Let's we're gonna jump forward now. Your aviation career is important, but the accidents that you had were life changing.
Right.
Let's get into the first one. What year is it, and where are you living at the time? And tell us what happened in this first accident.
Okay. So we moved from Anchorage to near Minneapolis because that was the corporate headquarters of Northwest Airlines, and I was going to be a sim instructor. I had two kids and be a sim instructor for Northwest Airlines and fly the line. So we lived in Cannon Falls, which is exactly halfway between Rochester and the Twin Cities on Highway 52.
Mm-hmm.
We live on the west side, and I was going to drive north towards the airport. And Highway 52 used to have a stoplight on
Highway 52. And if I may interject, on Highway 52, to many, we lived in Rochester for several years. And Highway 52, when I used to drive Highway 52 between the Twin Cities and Rochester, was considered the most dangerous highway in the state. I don't know what it's like now. So when I was reading your book and I saw Highway 52, I just went, uh-huh. Because it's very dangerous. Please continue.
Well, thanks to my accident, there is no longer a stoplight on Highway 52. I was on the west side. I had a green light. I pulled up on the southbound lane of traffic, waiting for the opposing traffic from east to west to turn. And there was a guy at highway speeds who did not see his red light and T-boned me at highway speeds. Boom. The paramedic that arrived looked at the massive wreck and thought, oh, she's dead, and reached in, found a pulse. Nope, helicopter. The helicopter came and got me off to Mayo Clinic. I had a crushed pelvis, kind of like if you take a soda can and crush it. I had a shattered collarbone, and because I lost consciousness, a mild traumatic brain injury. So I had, in that time, I think I was only in the hospital for like 8 days or so. And I came back in a wheelchair, and because I had that tenacity and that drive that my parents instilled in me, I got back to flying. I had a year off because the FAA, if you lose consciousness, they need to make sure that you're okay to fly. I had a year off, went back to flying. And that accident was 2 days before Thanksgiving in 2008.
All right, hold on, Heather. You're making it sound way too easy. In the book, you go into quite detail as to how difficult it was to come back from this brain injury and all the injuries you had sustained in that accident. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to pick up with that before we get into the second accident, because I thought to myself when I was reading the book, you have indomitable spirit and perseverance, like few people I think that most people would ever meet. And we're going to get into more detail of that. You're listening to The World of Aviation. Not So, Heather Ann Sharp is our guest. And the book is I Have a Lot. That's another book that she has, I Have a Lot to Say. But the book we're talking about is Why Did I Survive? And we're going to get into I Have a Lot to Say. Okay, so how did you get the nickname, the handle, Not So?
That was funny. So our first week at pilot training, everybody was, you know, working out, getting their call signs and whatever fit. And it was Friday at the end of the day. We had a briefing from Social Actions, which is the equivalent of sexual harassment or equal opportunity. And so they a staff sergeant came in. He was very nervous, very uptight, and he wanted to break the ice and said to our class, he goes, well, certainly this class, and I was the only female in my pilot training class, he says, well, certainly this class has no problem with social actions. And a kid who we called Pizza from the Bronx, New York, was in the back, and he says, no, we don't, do we, sweet kids? And so then that guy, he blanched, he fled. The wing commander came in, I think he was a one star, and said, you may not call her sweet tits. And so then my call sign became not so sharp.
Funny. All right, let's get back to that first accident. Tell us about the difficulty in recovering from all of your injuries.
So the first accident, and really when I look back at it and a psychologist talked to me after the second accident, he goes, Heather, do you understand that the difference between the two? The first accident was a 2. This one is a 10, the second accident. So really... It was probably a big deal, but I just kept putting one foot in front of the other. The second accident occurred on Halloween Day of 2010. So clearly the fall is bad for me. So we have a horse farm in Cannon Falls, and the horses had chewed the bark off of some like 40-foot tall trees, and they were dead. And I thought, you know, we've got to get rid of those trees, because if a windstorm comes up and those trees fall on the fence, the horses are going to get out. It's going to be a wreck. Let's get rid of those trees. And so my husband was pushing over the trees with a skid steer, and they were falling down beautifully. And then he looked at his watch, and he said, oh, it's Halloween, let's take the kids, who at that time were, I think they were 8 and 11. Let's take them trick-or-treating. And I said, oh, no, we have plenty of time. Come on, bring it back out, which is totally typical of me. And so this time he tried to push over a tree, which was not quite dead, and he later called it a widowmaker, and it almost was. A branch very high up broke off the tree and fell on my head. and broke over my head, and I collapsed.
Wow.
So, because we live in a small town, the same paramedic got the call and looked at the address and thought, oh, my gosh, no way. So the ambulance responded and saw me laying on the ground and thought, oh, she's dead this time for sure. And I gasped, oh, no, helicopter. The same helicopter, not the same pilot, came and got me and took me to Mayo Clinic. This time, they rushed me into surgery and did brain surgery to remove my skull and cauterize the bleeding on the brain. I had 12 fractures in my back. I had a collapsed lung. I had double vision. I had, it was really, really bad, really bad. And I was in an induced coma for 5 days, ICU for 8, the hospital for 32. When I got out of there, the doctor said it's probably going to take your brain 7 years to heal. I'm like, huh, 7 years? And it was a long journey back, and there were many reasons why I can't identify a silver bullet. We threw enough at the wall that something stuck, and I don't know. There wasn't one answer as to why I got better, but many, many things, and I enumerate them in the book. And attitude is huge. The doctors at Mayo Clinic, and this is important part. I was not able to, for a long time, I was unconscious, and my husband would ask the doctors, is she going to get better? Is she going to get back to her old self? And he wanted concrete information. And they said, well, 100% is the goal, but to get there, this is what she needs to do today. And I do a lot of public speaking, and if they would have, and part of my talk is, if the doctors would have told Jack, based on the thousands of cases that we've seen, she will recover on the bell-shaped curve, somewhere between here and here, and I'm making a bell-shaped curve with my finger. The two things that they could not quantify is my attitude and my faith. If it was bad, I'd probably wind up on the negative side of the curve. If it was good, I might wind up on the positive side of the curve. I went back 6 years post-accident when I went back to flying for Delta Airlines, and the doctor said, Heather, your recovery is so far off the charts. We saw the x-rays. We read the reports. We knew factually what we were dealing with, and the picture was not pretty. This is a miracle. So I'm very lucky, very blessed.
You, this is, your story is an amazing story. You had your skull removed. You had your brain cauterized, as you said, to stop the bleeding. You're in an induced coma. I mean, you were in bad, bad shape. Your husband Jack was there. Your sons Grant and Ryan, they were there. And I you talk about the attitude in the book, and to begin with, you had a bad attitude. You didn't like any type of therapy. You fought it. What turned you around? What turned the bad attitude into a good attitude? What happened?
Thanks. Perfect. Thank you for bringing that up. Because at the time, when physical therapy would come in or the multiple therapies that I had, I thought, you are causing me pain. I do not want to. I do not want to do this. Just leave me alone. And I had a very, very bad attitude. And a nurse came in and with Jack and said, and got pretty angry with me and said, you have got to knock it off. You are lucky. I'm going to cry. You are lucky to be here. You should be dead. You get to observe your kids graduate, get married. However, if you want to participate in their lives, you've got to get out of that bed. And you've got to do the hard work now so that you can participate in their lives later. And I sat there and I folded my hands and I looked out the window and I stewed. And that, it Jack says, it was like a light switch that I threw the covers off my legs and I used my hands to get my legs off the side of the airplane. I said, all right, let's do this. And and their mouths fell open. They go, okay. and that was a 180 degree change. To go back a little bit, where it comes from, my uncle, who was a world champion cowboy, called it heart. He said, no, it didn't matter where they came from or what they did, golf, ping pong, Olympics, world champion cowboy, Heather, recovering after these massive accidents. If they had heart, they were going to succeed. And heart is hard to explain. It's a tenacity, a grit, a burning in your belly that you are not going to stop. If there's a will, there's a way, and you're going to find a way. And I talked to a person, a young man who had terminal cancer, and he was emotionally, as anybody would be, emotionally in bad shape. And another piece of wisdom is don't sugarcoat it. Don't say, well, at least blah, 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 blah. No, call a spade a spade. And I said, this sucks. And I said, tell me about your life. What did you do before all of these doctor appointments and before all of this cancer completely derailed your life? And he thought about it, and he said, well, I was an Eagle Scout. I said, really? That's fantastic. I bet that was hard. And he got defensive. He goes, that was very hard. I said, bingo. That is, you have it. You've got it inside. Find it. Dust it off. The target now is not your Eagle Scout project. It is dealing with this cancer. And he still had cancer. He was still terminal. He later died. The cancer took his body, but it did not take his heart.
Wow. Heather, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. And your faith had a lot to do with your recovery, and we're going to go into that. Now, let's talk about your faith, because your faith had so much to do with your recovery. Did you have faith before you started the recovery process, or did it happen during the process?
Right. As a young person, we were Catholics, and I was a submarine Catholic. I'd surface on Christmas and Easter. When I married my husband in 1997, he had a great faith, and his family does too. And we were Lutheran. And so I had a pretty good idea, but after the accident, it changed my view. And I don't think that this was preordained. I don't think that God made the car run the red light or made the stupid branch fall on my head. I think stuff happens. And it's how, what you're going to do with the stuff that happens. And God helping us through that. And that was critical in my attitude, and my faith was critical in my recovery.
Do you believe that when it's our time to go, it's our time to go, and we just don't have any say in that, and it's just going to happen? And it just wasn't your time to go during either one of those accidents?
And like my husband says, he goes, well, clearly you've got to improve your life because God keeps sending you back.
No, that's funny. That's funny.
And I do have more to do here. And if one nugget of my book can help somebody, or if speaking to that terminal guy with cancer can help him, then that's why I'm here.
You sound like you've gotten a new mission in life, and writing the books is part of that, and helping other people is all part of that.
Yes. The other book, I Have a Lot to Say, was the idea was born from at Mayo Clinic. They let Jack bring our dog into the hospital. And so a dirty, hairy, smelly dog on my bed. But the nurses knew that there's no medication that they can give the help that that dog is gonna give to me. And that idea was the idea for the book. And if you look at a dog, and if you spell it backwards, the dog does not care if you have your makeup on. It does not care if you're in a wheelchair. It cares what's inside. And the dog says, I will never, ever leave you. I will always be happy to see you. There's nothing you can do, nothing that will make me not love you.
And by the way, the photo in the book with your dog in the bed with you at the hospital is priceless.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible. It really is. You know, you also talk about the unconditional love of horses, and we own horses also. And when they look at you with those big brown eyes, they look right through you, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
So the premise of the book, the second book, is Speedy. It's told from the first person. Speedy the horse is the speaker. And he can read minds. And he knows what he has four owners. And he knows what they're all thinking. Well, guess who else can read minds? And guess who else knows exactly what's going on? God, and has the same perspective as the horse does. So it goes through Speedy's life, and at the end, he is a therapy horse for an autistic camp, and it's quite remarkable. And actually,
the website. Go ahead.
That was kind of based on a true story, because when my dad was, that piece of it was based on a true story. We had a very high powered barrel horse, and in retirement, we gave him to a therapy place, which was in my healing, riding horses was absolutely critical. And it was a very, very touching story.
What kind of horses do you have?
We have quarter horses.
Excellent, excellent. Wonderful. They're wonderful creatures, aren't they? They're 1,200-pound Labradors, are they not?
They are. They are. And when I studied, when I realized that I did hippotherapy, not the hippo is Greek for horse. It's not the animal in the zoo with the tiny wiggly ears. Hippotherapy is used for people with neurological problems or autism or people in a wheelchair, because there's nothing else that stimulates the, if you're walking with your hips and your hips are moving, an elliptical trainer doesn't do it. But riding a horse and stimulating, keeping your balance, they don't know why it works, but they know it does work.
Heather, I couldn't agree with you more. And I want to give the website again. It's heathersharp.info. First book is Why Did I Survive? I would highly recommend this. It's just a wonderful book. And my wife is going to read it as soon as we're done with this this interview, Heather. Because I told her, you've got to read this. Another book, I Have a Lot to Say. And I'm anxious to get into that. Again, the website, heathersharp.info. Heathersharp.info. Heather, thank you so much for joining us this morning.